This is Audible.
The Mental Game of Poker 2, proven strategies for improving poker skill, increasing mental endurance, and playing in the zone consistently. Written by Jared Tendler with Barry Carter. Narrated by Jared Tendler. Acknowledgements. I'm very appreciative of all the help that I've had writing this book. I have an amazing team, and I know I've run well to find them. Barry Carter, you've done a fantastic job once again helping write this book. The process is not easy, but working with you makes it a heck of a lot easier. Thank you for helping me to focus on only what's most relevant to poker players. You often call me a BS detector, but you're pretty good at it too, quickly spotting when I'm saying something that's complete crap. In the years since the first book, you become a better friend, colleague, and writer. It's great fun working with you, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter. Alexis Nahum, you've outdone yourself. Thank you for all the time, effort, and care you put into editing this book. I'm amazed at how you're able to turn my gibberish into eloquence. This is truly a skill you can be proud of. I know all the late nights you spent getting every point just right and making every word flow just right. Your dedication to making this book as good as it can be is truly appreciated. Corey Karsh, the future Mrs. Tendler, thank you for your love and support through all the ups and downs of the writing process. You were my coach when I needed one. I'm also extraordinarily grateful that you handled most of our wedding planning so I could complete the book before we get hitched. Now we have two reasons to celebrate. I'm very appreciative of the love, support, and guidance given to me by my family and friends. I particularly want to thank my parents, sister, and brother-in-law for always being there for me. Life is easier when I know you have my back. I'm particularly grateful to my clients who have graciously shared their stories. Roy Basin, Darren Kramer, Matt Squeeding, and Danny Steinberg. Having your voices in this book makes it complete, and I'm really thankful for that. Finally, thank you to all the readers of my first book who shared your feedback with me. Your praise motivated me to work even harder on this book, and your critiques helped me to understand how to make it stronger. Chapter 1, Introduction. There are two major areas of skill in poker, tactics and the mental game. Tactics are where poker players spend most of their time and include things such as odds, strategy, hand analysis, image, and metagame. The mental game is given much less attention, but it's what sharpens, strengthens, and prepares the mind to function at its highest level. Most importantly, it allows all of the learning done on a tactical level to be implemented into a player's game. If you're only focused on improving tactically, your game may not be progressing as fast as it could. This is true even if you subscribe to a training site, talk about hands, read books, and study away from the table. The work you put into improving your tactical skill can show diminished returns if you're not also improving your mental game. When poker players think of the mental game, they typically think of tilt, fear, motivation, and confidence problems. However, they rarely consider factors such as focus, decision-making, and discipline as a means to elevate their game and increase their edge. The purpose of this book is to help you refine these factors and consistently reach the peak of your mental performance, otherwise known as the zone. You may not have even realized that poker players can play in the zone. But think about those instances where you just know the right decisions. The game feels easy. You're in the flow of the action, and it seems as if your opponents are playing their hands face up. That's the zone. Many players only experience the zone randomly, but it actually happens for predictable reasons, just as tilt does. This book breaks down the zone into its essential components and shows you how to develop a strategy to reach it consistently. You'll learn how to study and analyze the patterns that lead to this mental peak, just as many of you did with your mental game problems in the Mental Game of Poker, TMGP. The edges in poker are getting smaller all the time, but there's a big advantage for players who can consistently reach their mental peak. Filled with straightforward, step-by-step instructions, this book is also designed to help you optimize your approach to learning improve your decision-making, and increase your focus, discipline, and mental endurance. It will show you that a mental game like poker shares a lot of similarities with sports. Professional athletes understand the importance of training their bodies to meet the demands of the toughest competition, and you can do the same for your mind. By mirroring proven techniques adopted by elite athletes, you can condition your mind to play poker at your highest level, perhaps even higher than you thought was possible. For those who have read TMGP, I'll make it perfectly clear what this book does for your game. It advances the front end of your inchworm. After improving your mental game issues, you brought your game to another level by moving the back end of your inchworm forward. Now you're ready to take the front end to another level, and this book is filled with the material to help you do just that. If you haven't read TMGP, you do not need to read it first. There will, however, be instances where mental game issues are highlighted as potential limitations in your ability to benefit from the topics covered in this book. In these situations, I will not revisit them in depth and instead refer you to TMGP. If you start to find that tilt, fear, motivation, and confidence problems are recurring in your game, you may need to read my first book, where they're explained in more detail. My background. As I discussed in TMGP, I became interested in the relationship between the mind and performance after failing to qualify for the 1997 U.S. Open Golf Championship. I choked. Soon after, I looked to sports psychology to figure out a way to excel under pressure. I was a 3-time All-American in college, but major tournaments were my downfall. I worked hard to improve my mental game, yet I couldn't solve the problem. The existing material in sports psychology wasn't working for me, so I began a master's program in counseling psychology to learn how to identify the cause of psychological issues. I suspected that was the missing link, and what was lacking from sports psychology at the time. I went on to earn my degree in counseling psychology, become a licensed therapist, and then started practicing as a mental game coach for golfers. During that period, I began combining what I knew about sports psychology with what I learned from counseling, and started developing a new approach. But it wasn't until I shot 63, 69, and 65 in 3 consecutive competitive rounds of golf in 2007 that I realized how much my own mental game had progressed. At times during all 3 rounds, I was in the zone, but that was especially true when I shot 63. It was like I could do no wrong. Every shot went where I wanted it to go, and I drained nearly every putt I looked at. The work I put into my mental game wasn't the only reason for the hot streak. I was also focused on improving my technique in all aspects of my game, especially my full swing and putting. I never forgot the lesson that developing both mental and tactical skill is necessary to perform at the highest levels. Not long after, I started working with my first poker client, who I met on the golf course, Dusty Leatherash Schmidt. I quickly saw how the work I was doing with golfers translated to poker and how big the need was for a mental game coach in poker. Dusty was originally looking for help with his tilt problem, but once that issue was behind him, we worked on maximizing his focus, decision-making, and mental endurance. Eventually, he was consistently reaching the zone. That's what I want for you. I wrote this book to give you the information you need to perform at your peak and to reach levels you never thought were possible. You may not have even realized that you could play in the zone consistently. Many players don't. Reaching that higher level won't happen just by reading this book. You have to work at it too. But once you start to see positive results and the benefits of applying the strategies in this book, you'll realize it was worth the effort. Performance myths. Since the nuances of high-level mental game performance are not talked about enough in poker, misconceptions can easily run wild among players. It is important to shine a light on these misguided beliefs, as they can be a major reason why players rarely reach the zone or perform at their peak. Here are some of the most common myths that are dispelled in this book. It's possible to always play your A game. Confidence is necessary to play well. You should never play when you're tired. Results-based goals are bad. You can win just by thinking positively. Playing in the zone happens randomly. You can win by visualizing yourself winning. Tweeting, texting, surfing the internet, and other constant distractions don't have much of an impact on your game, You either have self-discipline or you don't. Elite poker players just have more innate talent than everyone else. Overview. I had a rough outline for this book even before I finished the first one. I knew that there were two parts of the mental game, the back end and the front end. Since the issues that make up the back end must improve before the front end can advance, the first book was dedicated to those issues. Now the focus shifts to the front end, so you can make your best even better and more reliable. Here's a brief overview of what this book has to offer. Chapter 2, The Zone. Learn how the zone applies to poker, and discover the factors that will help you reach it consistently. Get an overview of existing theories, as well as original ones being introduced for the first time. Gain a strategy to train the skills necessary to reach the zone consistently while removing the problems that are blocking your progress. Chapter 3, Learning. Discover learning theories, methods, and errors that poker players rarely consider. Create a more organized and efficient method for learning, which ultimately will allow you to learn even faster. Chapter 4, Decision Making. Optimize your decision-making process by correctly judging what information to use, when to trust your gut, and how to avoid the limits of thinking. Chapter 5, Focus. Find out how to increase the intensity of your focus, as well as minimize distractions, prevent boredom, and avoid burnout. Chapter 6, Goals. Learn how to set goals, avoid obstacles, and use your past experience, including failures, to drive your game higher. Chapter 7, Self-Discipline. Learn how to improve your work ethic, better manage your time, and create a healthier balance in your life. Chapter 8, Grinding. Get an overview of the keys to successful grinding, automation, endurance, and rest, and learn how to take on extreme grinding challenges, such as Supernova Elite and Rake Races. How to use this book. Here are some suggestions and notes about the book to help you get the most out of it. 1. Do the work. I paid close attention to emails, forum posts, tweets, and reviews from people talking about TMGP. Not surprisingly, those who worked harder got more out of the book. It's okay if the theories, concepts, and strategies don't make sense right away. The material can be complex at times. The more times you review the sections, the better you'll understand them. 2. If you haven't read TMGP. Before diving into this book, read Appendix 1 to learn about two key concepts from TMGP, the adult learning model and inchworm. They're important for you to understand in order to get the most out of this book. 3. Worksheets to make your job easier. I've put together a packet of Word documents and Excel files to help you gather notes, break down areas of your game, and track your progress. Go to www.jaredtendlerpoker.com/worksheets to download them all for free. 4. It's all relative. Make sure to think of phrases such as an extraordinarily high-level decision, not in general terms, but relative to your game. 5. It's less of a choose-your-own-adventure book. The mental game issues covered in TMGP had a lot of interconnections that made it easy to skip around to the sections that were most relevant to you. In this book, however, the chapters build on each other, and I advise you to read them in order. Of course, the choice is yours, but if you do decide to skip around, make sure to at least read chapters 2 and 3 first. They contain the most essential and in-depth material, and build a foundation for the topics discussed in the rest of the book. 6. Do not read this book cover to cover and expect to know it all. The process of improvement is more like chopping down a tree with an axe than cutting it down with a huge chainsaw. It happens steadily over time. Keep this book close by as you gradually and systematically work on the various aspects of your mental peak. 7. Questions are posed to you throughout the book. Take some time to reflect and answer these questions as if you're being asked them directly. It makes the material in the book more relevant to you and gives you a better chance of improving. Ideally, you'll also write the answers down in the worksheets you can download from my website. 8. When rushing to understand your mental game, it can be easy to get overloaded with information. Cramming too much information into your head can make you confused. Going slowly through the book or specific sections may make it seem like it's taking longer to improve, but in the long run, it's quite the opposite. 9. Do what works. People are diverse, so it's hard to know what's going to work best particularly for you. Start by following the strategies provided in each chapter to gain experience. Then try adjusting the strategies to fit your individual needs and goals. This is no different than taking a new poker concept and molding it to fit your game. 10. Don't literally follow every word that's written in this book. Even if it fits you perfectly, still take a step back to think about how each point applies specifically to you. Doing so helps you learn material and personalize the strategies. 11. Apply what you learn outside of poker. After working on your mental game, you can start applying the techniques in this book to things outside of poker, such as sports, business, investing, exercise, dating, and relationships. By utilizing them outside of poker, you're in effect cross-training, which will help you learn and improve in multiple areas simultaneously. Chapter 2, The Zone. When it comes to understanding the zone, poker is behind the times. Sports psychology routinely helps athletes across the sports world reach the zone. But in poker, it's barely even discussed. Whether reading forum posts, books, or articles, mentions of the zone occur as randomly as a player actually reaching it. In general, poker players are driven to play their absolute best, but when it comes to the zone, they don't know where to begin. They feel like the zone is a place they can neither influence nor control. In believing this, they fail to recognize a crucial fact. By building a formula that is tested and dependable, they can entirely control their ability to reach the zone consistently. One reason poker players often struggle to understand how to get in the zone is that they confuse it with running well. While running well, all your decisions work out, and poker seems easy. The same thing happens in the zone. However, when you're running well, your sense of reality can get skewed and cause you to believe you're also playing amazingly well. You may think that you made a genius value bet, but in reality, you were just lucky that you ran into the bottom of your opponent's range. Another reason the zone is so mystifying is that it's hard for players to pinpoint. This is in part due to it being experienced in different ways by each individual person. However, there are a number of common similarities. The game feels easy, and decisions are made automatically. You have gut instincts, senses, or feelings about the right decisions, but can't explain their rationale. You're able to consider more factors than normal, and process them more quickly. You feel calm, patient, and at ease. There's no stress or difficulty, even with things that normally cause tilt or anxiety. You are totally engrossed and in the flow of the action. Any thoughts of the past or future are purely strategic and involve reflecting on past decisions and planning future streets. Your perception of time is altered, and you lose a sense of it. For some players, time flies by. For others, it slows down dramatically. You're focused purely on execution and not results. You don't experience any outside thoughts or distractions, including the mental game issues that typically creep in. The zone is a state of heightened mental functioning, awareness, and concentration that allows poker players to perform at the highest possible levels. It can be mystifying, but looking at sound theory, logic, and scientific research, it can be brought back down to size. As this happens, a path for you to reach it consistently begins to emerge. Deconstructing the zone. The zone is predictable. It can be reached consistently with sufficient knowledge and the right approach. In beginning to uncover this strategy, it's necessary to break down and understand these three essential facets of the zone. Energy, learning, the data stream. Energy. The zone cannot be reached without the right amount of energy. This is true in a mentally demanding game like poker, just as it is in a physically demanding sport such as basketball. If your level of energy is too high or too low, you might be able to perform well, but you won't be able to reach the zone. The Yerkes-Dodson law illustrates the direct relationship between energy level, i.e. stress, emotion, and arousal, and performance. As you can see in the chart below, maximizing your performance does not mean maximizing your energy level. You need to find the level that works best for you. On the left side of the curve, performance is poor because there's not enough energy to properly fuel higher brain functions, such as thinking, planning, and decision-making. Think about how poorly you play when you are tired, bored, unmotivated, depressed, or too relaxed. Many of you won't even play at these times to avoid playing so badly. On the right side of the curve, you also play poorly. However, it's for the opposite reason. Too much energy. When the brain is overloaded with energy or emotion, higher brain functions shut down. This means that the excessive energy associated with tilt, overconfidence, and anxiety has the power to cause your performance to suffer. As your energy level increases up the left side of the curve, or as it decreases up the right side, higher brain functions and the quality of your play steadily improve. That means you're better able to plan action on future streets, remember prior action, and think on the right level, even across a lot of tables. However, as the graph illustrates, there's not a lot of room for error in maintaining this peak level of performance. You can't have too much energy, and you can't have too little. The goal is to find your ideal middle ground. Call it the Goldilocks of energy. The first person to research differences in the levels of energy that lead to the zone was renowned sports psychologist Yuri Hannan. He developed a theory called individualized zone of optimal functioning after finding a variation in the level of energy athletes need in order to play in the zone. He found that some athletes get into the zone when they feel relaxed, others with moderate levels of anxiety, and the rest need high levels of energy. This variation means that players who need to be relaxed to get into the zone will play much worse when exposed to high levels of anxiety that other players actually thrive on. The opposite is true as well. Players who prefer high levels of intensity will lose their mental edge when they are too relaxed. Ultimately, you have to figure out what works best for you. So are you the type that plays best when you're relaxed, fired up, or somewhere in between? Many factors contribute to your level of energy and influence your ability to reach the zone. Understanding each one is crucial. The major factors are physical needs, emotional state, goals, degree of challenge, perspective. Physical needs. If you are struggling to take your game to a higher level and can't immediately point out what needs improving, a lack of physical energy may be the problem. Better rest, a healthier diet, and more exercise have all been proven to increase overall energy levels. Consider gathering some data to see if there's a connection between the quality of your play and your eating, sleeping, and exercise habits. If you begin to notice a pattern, strive to make some small improvements and look to targeted resources about diet, sleep, and exercise for more advice. While a proper amount of sleep, a healthy diet, and regular exercise can have many benefits to general health and well-being, their importance in getting into the zone is often overstated. Again, your ability to play in the zone depends on the level of energy that is right for you. If you regularly get little sleep, eat poorly, and don't exercise, you can still perform in the zone because you're accustomed to those habits. Players who radically improve their diets and start exercising frequently can struggle at first to handle the dramatic increase in mental functioning that occurs as a result. Don't let that deter you, of course. Improving these habits is never a bad thing. Just be prepared for the adjustment period that may accompany them. Emotional state. Emotions can have an important impact on your energy levels and give you the boost you need to reach the zone. It's common for players to perform at very high levels the first time they move up to a new stake, possibly due to an increase in anxiety. The pressure to perform at a more challenging level gets them amped up and propels them to play in the zone. when a player is feeling inspired by, for example, a friend who just won a big tournament. That inspiration can light a fire within them and raise their energy to zone levels. Your mind will utilize any source of energy, even an emotion with a sometimes negative connotation, like anger. If you are feeling bored or unmotivated, anger can serve as a mental boost to kick your mind back into gear. It is important to realize that although these emotions can have positive implications on your game, they should not be relied upon as a consistent and reliable way to play in the zone. To utilize them in this way at all, you have to be able to exercise a high level of mental and emotional control. In addition, you don't want to grow dependent on so many external factors, example, opponents, friends, and stakes. It is much more effective to discover ways to affect and control your energy levels from within. Goals. Motivation is a powerful source of energy, and goals provide structure and direction for that energy. The clearer your goals, the more intense and well-directed your motivation will be. When you have weaknesses in your goals, your energy gets dispersed in too many directions, and your motivation suffers as a result. When you are able to establish your exact targets, you can then effectively focus all your motivation and energy on reaching them. And in doing this, you significantly increase your chances of success. The topic of goals is vast and will be discussed in more detail in Chapter 6. Degree of challenge. While playing in soft games is often the most profitable way to game select, keep in mind that you need to be sufficiently challenged in order to reach the zone. One of the most popular theories about the zone comes from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, a Hungarian psychology professor and the author of the book Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. He defines being in the zone as a state of flow, whereby a person is fully immersed in what they are doing. Csikszentmihalyi asserts that in order to achieve this state of flow, a balance must be struck between the skill of the performer and the challenge of the task. In other words, the performer needs to be sufficiently challenged and have enough skill in that task to meet the challenge. The graphic below illustrates the relationship between skill and challenge. As you can see, the size of the challenge and the amount of skill you have aren't important separately. It's the relationship between the two that determines your ability to reach the zone. When your skills are low and the challenge is low, or when the challenge is high and your skills are also high, you can perform in the zone. However, if you're a massive underdog, you'll be overwhelmed by the challenge, and according to Csikszentmihalyi, you'll experience anxiety, not flow. Conversely, if you expect to easily crush a weak opponent, you'll get bored by a challenge that's too low and fall out of the zone. Of course, this relationship isn't always true. There are many instances of players who raise their games to incredibly high levels despite being severely outmatched. In addition, there are many players who ignore the size of their edge and love the challenge of competing no matter how weak the opponent. This highlights the power of perspective. As Csikszentmihalyi explains, it's not the real challenges presented by the situation that count, but those that the person is aware of. Perspective. The mind is a powerful tool when used effectively. The right belief or perspective is powerful enough to influence your ability to reach the zone, even while playing heads up against Phil Ivey. Of course, that doesn't mean you'll win. The battle for success in poker is as much about a player's belief about their skill as it is about their actual skill. When players overestimate their skill level, they not only tend to play in games that are less profitable, they also reduce their chances of playing in the zone. Believing they have more skill than is actually true also underestimates the degree of challenge posed by their competition. This lowers their energy level, and as a result, they lose focus, stop looking for small edges, and don't think through hands. The opposite is true as well. When skilled poker players underestimate their skill, they can feel anxious or overwhelmed against inferior competition. This can cause an excessive increase in energy that could have been avoided with a more accurate perspective of their game. As you can see, having the right energy level is not as simple as just being well rested. The more you study the influence these five factors have on your energy, the easier it will be to find your own ideal level. Later in the chapter, you'll be given advice on how to simplify this process. Learning. For many players, the most recognizable feature of playing in the zone is the ability to just know the correct decision. This hunch, gut instinct, sixth sense, or soul read allows them to make some pretty amazing plays. What's the explanation for this? How do you just know your opponent is bluffing? Where does that knowledge come from? Are you highly skilled or psychic? Answers to these questions center around unconscious learning. When you're in the zone, you gain access to unconscious knowledge, and this accounts for the dramatic increase in the quality of your decision-making. Unconscious learning. Since unconscious learning is by definition unconscious, you may be wondering how it's possible to know that it exists. The proof comes from an interesting study called the Iowa Gambling Task, which aimed to better understand the role of emotion in decision-making. In the experiment, participants were given a fake bankroll of $2,000 and presented with four virtual decks of cards, face down on a computer screen. Each time they selected a card, they would either win or lose money based on the value of the card. Their goal was to win as much money as possible. Dollar values were both large and small, $100 and $50, and positive and negative. What the participants were not told was that the decks were stacked. Two decks were good, in that they contained more positive values, and the other two decks were bad, because participants lost money when mainly choosing cards from them. The good decks were of lower value, example, plus $50, minus $10, and the bad decks were of higher value, example, plus $100, minus $80. Participants were wired up to a machine that measured their anticipatory SCR level, which is a measure of unconscious stress reactions. When stressed, the body secretes micro amounts of sweat through the fingertips. This is what the researchers used to identify when the body was experiencing stress, even when the participants weren't feeling it consciously. The research showed that on average, participants began showing a greater stress reaction when reaching for a bad deck after selecting only 10 cards. See the chart on the next page. Curious if this stress reaction was registered consciously, the researchers asked participants if they had developed a strategy to maximize profit. This was a ridiculous question at the time. The participants had no idea that their bodies had begun to recognize a difference between the four decks. Their minds were still blind to this early stage of pattern recognition. Participants continued picking cards, and as they did, the gap between the anticipatory SCR levels for the good and the bad decks widened. This effect continued throughout the rest of the study, which consisted of 90 more card selections. However, something changed around the 50th card. At that point, when researchers asked if they had found a way to maximize profit, participants reported having a feeling or a hunch, but they couldn't explain themselves. It was as though the knowledge about how to beat the game was on the tip of their tongue. Finally, after around the 80th card selection, the light bulb turned on. They could explain the difference between the good and the bad decks. What started as a small, unconscious difference in stress reactions grew into a hunch and eventually turned into conscious recognition. The Iowa Gambling Task proves there is constant data collection and pattern recognition happening below the level of our awareness. The zone makes this knowledge accessible and usable. The ideal level of energy previously described maximizes the brain's ability to pull this data to the surface and use it to make extraordinarily high-level decisions. The next step is to actually become aware of this data and eventually be able to apply it in your sessions. In order to do this, you first need to understand the process this data goes through in order to become fully learned and consistently accessible to you. The Zone Learning Model, ZLM, outlines the four stages of this process. Level 1. Intangible competence. You know what's right, but can't explain why it's right. In other words, you're blind to the reasons you perform so well. In a vacuum, the move might even look like a mistake, but you have such a strong hunch that you just go with it. The real reason you called or folded could be due to your opponent's prior action. A physical tell, a timing tell, a bet sizing tell, the momentum of the game, G-bucks, table image, table position, metagame, range balancing, or something entirely new. You know there are so many factors that can go into making a poker decision, but this decision is one you simply can't explain. The knowledge you have at this level is composed of the same unconscious data that was highlighted by the Iowa gambling task. Level 2. Conceptual competence. After an aha moment, or looking closely at decisions made while playing in the zone, you now realize why you knew what was right. You become aware of a skill or a concept that will take your game to a new level. However, you haven't gained enough experience yet to consciously apply it on a regular basis. When you reach this level of knowledge, you've gathered up enough unconscious data and are at the same stage the participants of the Iowa gambling task were in after picking up the 80th card. There are two ways to reach this level: develop original concepts, or learn them from other players. Doyle Brunson and other innovators conceptualized parts of the game, such as the importance of table position, after years of experience and reflection. The alternative method is to learn from others by watching videos, reading articles, and working with a coach. Level 3. Conscious competence. This stage is exactly the same as it is in the adult learning model, ALM. You have done sufficient work to understand the concept and can now apply it on a regular basis, even when not in the zone. You still have to do it consciously, though. It isn't second nature yet. Level 4. Unconscious competence. This is the final stage of both the ALM and the ZLM. Knowledge about the concept is now so well learned, it's automatic at all times, even when you're tilted or exhausted. Consistent access to new intangible competence is necessary to reach the zone. In order to gain that access, you must regularly convert intangible competence into conceptual competence. The reality is, it can take weeks, months, or longer for you to become conscious of these complex patterns in poker. The A-Game Journal is a tool that simplifies and accelerates that process. A-Game Journal. In the A-Game Journal, you're gathering notes about the peak of your game. Here are some ideas for how to get the most from this tool. After every instance that you play in the zone, take exhaustive notes about your experience. Some of what you write about will make sense right away, and other things may be tougher to explain. You can also talk this out with other players. Just be sure to write down notes after your conversation. Recording video or audio notes can work as well. Focus on hands where you had a strong intuition or made a spontaneous move that worked, and try to explain why they were correct. These are likely to be the toughest hands to explain, but it's important that you try. Don't edit, censor, or force your thoughts. Just write or talk. You're too early in the process to know exactly what is right and what can provide any insight. Trying to force an answer can lead you to arrive at an incorrect conclusion. If you're unable to make sense of your notes, revisit them in the future and try again to explain what you saw in the hand. You may still be unable to conceptualize why your play was correct, but each time, you will inch your way closer. While playing, you may have clear thoughts about why your decision was correct, but then you forget just a few minutes later. Consider quickly writing down your thoughts without analyzing them any further until after the session. You're trying to balance continuing to play in the zone with capturing high-level data about your game. If you divert your focus too much, you could end up falling out of the zone. This process can't be forced. Like the participants in the Iowa gambling task, you may struggle to explain this unconscious knowledge that you know how to roll in your decisions. That's okay. Struggling is expected. Merely attempting to access this knowledge will prove to be helpful in digesting some of the accumulated data. Record any insights you have while watching a training video, talking with other players, or at random times. The A-Game Journal becomes a record of your exploration of the highest levels of your game. Revisit it after you have new ideas, play in the zone, or develop insight after watching a poker video. Over time, as you continue to think, gather more experience, and learn about these areas of your game, you will be able to transform a hunch into conceptual competence. The work you put into the A-Game Journal may not immediately bear fruit, but as you continually revisit it, you'll steadily get closer to creating new insight or conceptual competence. If you're already aware of the concept, having learned about it from a video or another player, the A-Game Journal will help you to develop an even higher level of comprehension. The process is a bit like a baby learning to walk. They can't be forced. They can only be encouraged. Encouragement in the A-Game Journal comes in the form of regular attention, attempted explanation, repetition, trial and error, and gathering ideas from other sources. The A-Game Journal is not only a great tool for keeping your mind clear so you can consistently get into the zone, it also helps you learn at the highest levels of your game. There's no one perfect way to use the A-Game Journal, but the more you work with it, the more you'll discover which methods work best for you. The data stream. The action in poker flows like a stream of data with an endless supply of betting patterns, bluffing tendencies, physical tells, and more. While the flow of data is constant, your ability to access that data is not. The mind absorbs a lot of data while playing poker, and even more so while in the zone. If this data that's absorbed is not regularly moving through each stage of the learning process, too much will eventually accumulate. This slows down the learning process and prevents you from regularly getting into the zone. To prevent data accumulation after a session, you need to actively facilitate the movement of knowledge through the stages of learning by correcting tactical and mental mistakes during and after sessions. Converting data to the next level of learning can help free up the necessary space to acquire new intangible competence. The methods you use depend on your level of performance. After a session in which you reach the zone, use the A-Game Journal to assist in converting intangible competence to conceptual competence. If you didn't reach the zone, use the suggestions for cooling down and reviewing your game offered later in the chapter. Correcting tactical or mental mistakes during a session is automatic when you're in the zone. This is because you have access to your full range of knowledge. Those immediate corrections minimize the accumulation of data, keep your mind clear, and allow you to stay in the zone. From a mental side, things that are normally tilting don't even phase you in the zone. After taking a bad beat, for example, you immediately realize that bad beats are a normal part of the game. However, when you're not in the zone, you need to consciously inject logic to make the correction and minimize accumulation. Correcting tactical mistakes uses the same strategy. If tactical and mental leaks are left alone, and additional layers of thought are piled on, this accumulation of data creates a bloated brain. In the next section, you'll learn more about how to minimize accumulation. You cannot access all data. There is a maximum amount of data that the mind has access to at any one time. You can't know it all because the definition of all evolves as you master skills and acquire knowledge. As that happens, you can dig deeper into the data stream and understand the game in new ways. To see the evolution of your game, look back to a point in your poker history when you were a weaker player. Chances are you can see more detail or nuances within those old hands than you could back then. Whereas previously you might have only seen the value of your hand and had a vague idea of your opponent's range. Now you can also consider implied odds, reverse implied odds, range balancing, and previous history. As your skills in poker evolve, you gain knowledge that enables you to dig deeper into your past experiences, allowing you to see them in new ways. This process can be illustrated in something as basic as watching a movie. When you watch a movie several times, especially a great one, you'll see more depth in the characters and in the storyline each time you watch it. You'll also understand the movie differently if you've gone several years without seeing it. The movie didn't change. You did. Whether watching a movie or playing a hand of poker, the details you see for the first time were there all along. You just didn't have the knowledge or perspective to pick up on them. Client story. Danny Steinberg. High stakes heads up cash and sit and goes. I used to think being in the zone was something you could just will yourself to do. I would try and talk myself into it by saying, hey, knuckle down and focus. Go slow and just process everything. Just do it. That was never really a successful approach for me, but it's all I knew how to do. After learning more about the zone, I realized that having a sense of awareness was something you work towards, and it doesn't happen instantly. I was really motivated to get my brain functioning at the highest possible level, and I was willing to do whatever I could. That meant not only improving tactically and mentally, but I also ate better, exercised more, and used a warm-up routine and journal religiously. For me, the zone is like a heightened sense of awareness. It's being aware of all the information coming towards you and being able to process that information well. When I'm having a C game experience, I either miss a crucial piece of information or I'm just not able to process it. A great example of being in the zone happened at the WSOPE main event in 2010. I had a deep run and played really well against some incredibly tough competition. In the tournament just before the main event, the 10K heads up, I felt like I was outplaying a very good opponent, but ended up busting on the bubble. That gave me a lot of motivation to go into the main event focused on playing my absolute best. That's all I wanted. That meant making decisions slower and really trying to take in every single piece of information possible. How quickly did the person tap the table when he checked? How did his eyes look? How was his posture? How did he bet in the past? What were our previous experiences? I was really going all out to play my best. That goal carried me through to the final table, and it helped me remain calm against Phil Ivey and Victor Blum along the way. Throughout my career, I had a real problem playing against players that I really respected. I gave them way too much credit for putting me on an exact hand or figuring out what I was up to. But that time, I stayed committed to my plan and played really well against them. I'm not sure if I was in the zone then, but when I reached the final table, I certainly was. One hand in particular stands out. I was dealt pocket jacks preflop and opened in late position. James Board, the eventual winner, re-raised me. I looked at him, and I realized he looked and acted exactly the same as he did during a hand 2 days before, when he had aces. Being mainly an online player, physical tells were not a big part of my game, but concentrating on only one table and committing myself to take in every piece of information I could, I noticed so much more going on in each hand. It was just a little piece of information that until this hand came up, I didn't even know I had noticed 2 days before, and now I was about to base my decision on it. I had an active image at the time, and it was a situation where I couldn't fold such a strong hand given how loose I had been playing. But there was another important factor that helped me decide. James was a tight player who rarely re-raised, and had recently re-raised me preflop. Whenever a non-aggressive player became aggressive in hands within close proximity, I tended to interpret the latter as strong. I decided to fold my jacks, and he ended up telling me later that he had pocket aces. Obviously, he could have remembered the hand wrong, since it was an uneventful hand to him. Picking up on all these small details that usually would go over my head, and being able to weigh each one of them correctly, is what the zone is all about for me. In a vacuum, this was never a fold, but in the moment, I just knew that this small detail I had honed in on was correct. I think what was so surprising about this hand was how much information that was so subtle managed to help me make a big fold. If I weren't as aware, it would have been something that passed me by. This was a moment where I felt like I was playing at the highest level I could possibly play. Unfortunately, Danny hasn't played much poker because of Black Friday. However, he is using the same lessons in his work at a hedge fund and in day trading. Fueled by a balance of challenge and skill, an ideal energy level can unlock the unconscious data present deep within your mind and propel you to play in the zone. Using the basic theory around these factors as a foundation, you're ready to take the next step and personalize a plan. Consistently getting into the zone. You can't summon the card you need just by saying one time. And by the same token, you can't will yourself into the zone by using some mental trigger word. Instead, the zone is something you're trying to cook up by mixing in the right ingredients. Now that you know the outcome you're aiming for, an ideal level of energy, and a mind clear enough to continually access intangible competence, the question becomes how to make it happen. Here's how you can begin tackling that challenge. Create a zone profile. Get into a zone routine. Start with a zone warm-up. Finish with a zone cooldown. Make routine adjustments. Zone profile. To begin getting into the zone consistently, rather than randomly, start by identifying the specific features that define your experience of the zone. Gaining an understanding of what being in the zone means, specifically for you, sets the target that all of your efforts will be centered around. Poker players are often quick to assume they know when they're playing well and when they're not. They give up a lot of mental edge by failing to recognize the subtle differences in their levels of performance. The best way to capture and analyze these differences is by creating a zone profile. This profile is not something we complete once and never refer to again. It becomes a living document that first serves as a baseline and then becomes a tool that tracks and measures progress. The zone profile can be so eye-opening for some players that just by completing it, they improve their chances of playing in the zone. Here are some questions to get you started. What is it like to play in the zone? How is the quality of your focus? What is your decision-making process like? What is your energy level? Do you feel calm, fired up, or somewhere in between? What contributes to an ideal level of energy for you? Does your sense of time speed up or slow down? In what percentage of your sessions or tournaments are you able to reach the zone? How long does it typically last? What is different about your warm-up, sleep, or level of physical activity on days where you're able to play in the zone? Are you more likely to get in the zone when playing at higher stakes or at lower stakes? What causes you to fall out of the zone? What is the first sign that indicates you're no longer in the zone? Do you raise your game when playing in certain events or against certain players? After studying your experience in the zone, create a document and name it Zone Profile. Put the date on it and write out the answers to the questions on the previous page, either as a list or in paragraph form. Work on it for several weeks or until you feel confident that you've created a solid description of the zone and the factors connected to it. Try and gather the best information you can find, but don't get obsessed with thinking your description has to be perfect from the start. Here are some tips to help you complete your zone profile. When you first begin to describe what the zone is like for you, it's often easier to start by defining what it's not. When considering the questions listed on the previous page, players often base their answers on instances where they played at a high level, but weren't necessarily in the zone. Do your best to distinguish the difference between playing at a high level and playing in the zone. This will make it easier for you to recognize the first sign that you've fallen out of the zone, which will make getting back there easier as well. As with any assessment, accuracy is more important than speed. Your ability to get into the zone consistently depends entirely on the quality of the information you're using. Gathering high-quality information could take up to a month or even longer if you play infrequently. Taking more time to get it right the first time doesn't mean you're delaying the process. In fact, you'll more likely be saving time by avoiding the delays that come when you have to repeatedly correct mistakes and inaccuracies. Be sure to update your zone profile after each time you play in the zone. It is important that you take notes about the new instance before reviewing your existing profile, so that you won't be influenced by previous descriptions. When adding new notes, you may find that many of the characteristics you wrote about in the original zone profile show up repeatedly. This confirms that your initial assessment was correct. On the other hand, if you notice new characteristics each time you take notes, you're still in the process of defining your experience. Keeping your profile up to date is also important for the following reasons. 1. A well-defined target is easier to hit. 2. You can see the evolution of certain qualities of the zone. Example, improved tactical knowledge, increased focus, the slowing down of time, and a sharper and clearer mind. 3. Faster recognition of when you are slipping out of the zone means you can get back into it more easily. With a lot of attention being given to playing in the zone, you may immediately see an increase in the frequency that you get there. Increased focus often provides an instant boost in the quality of your mental game, but that doesn't necessarily mean you truly have mastered it. Stay focused on building a longer track record that really proves you can get there consistently. Zone routine. In life, as well as in poker, we develop and maintain routines. Imagine how complex your days would be if you had to think about each mundane task. Brushing your teeth, getting dressed, eating, and driving your car. After several hours, you would be exhausted. Many people take for granted how many routines and habits are ingrained into the fabric of their lives until their routines are disrupted. If you have ever moved into a new home, you know what this is like. The changes to your routine and habits are a big reason why moving is so stressful. You no longer easily know where things are, so it takes more time and mental energy to do what used to be second nature. Even something as simple as making a morning cup of coffee becomes harder since your coffee, cups, and coffee maker are in a new place. Eventually, you settle into a routine, and life becomes easier. In poker, you can increase your chances of getting into the zone by developing and maintaining consistent routines. When you get into the zone more frequently as a result of your routine, a causal relationship can grow between them. When this association becomes strong enough, you'll begin to anticipate playing in the zone just by starting your routine. So, even when your energy level isn't ideal before you begin your routine, that association alone can act as a spark. However, it is important not to depend on this association as the sole catalyst for getting you into the zone. That dependence compromises your mental edge and practically guarantees that you will not play in the zone. Instead, make executing your routine a high priority and remain committed to keeping it up to date. While you want a routine that is consistent, that does not mean it should be static. As soon as your routine becomes stale, it starts to lose its effectiveness. Look at any successful athlete, amateurs and professionals alike. They all have structured routines. One major reason is that their routine puts their minds in a bubble where nothing can distract them from focusing on their performance. Your poker routine serves the same purpose and allows you to become completely immersed in the action. Once inside that bubble, only allow things inside that help you to play at your absolute best. Playing in the zone is tough enough under ideal circumstances, so it's worth removing all activities from your routine that compromise your performance. Your zone routine must include two essential components, a warm-up and a cool-down. Warming up before you play and cooling down afterwards eventually need to become such a natural part of playing poker that you do them automatically. If you have struggled in the past to add these elements to your game, just remember that learning your routine follows the rules of the ALM and can take a while to become learned to the level of unconscious competence. In the early stages of developing your warm-up and cool-down, you might need to try several options before determining what works best for you. Don't expect it to work perfectly right away, and don't overload yourself by trying to do too much too quickly. With enough time and effort, incorporating a warm-up and a cool-down will eventually go from feeling like a chore to an automatic part of your routine. Zone warm-up. Every player has a warm-up, even if they are not aware of it. A warm-up is simply what you do just prior to the start of playing poker. Drinking coffee, driving to the casino, reviewing hand histories, or simply turning on your computer and firing up tables. The goal, however, is to create a structured warm-up routine that allows you to build momentum so you're ready to play at a high level from the start, gets you ready to quickly identify and correct any tactical or mental game problems, creates a buffer against stress and pressure, separates poker from everything else in your life. Regardless of what you're currently doing to warm up, this is the question you have to ask yourself. Is what I'm doing before I play preparing me to play in the zone or at least at a high level? While many players have a structured warm-up, few can say that it adequately prepares them to play in the zone. If your warm-up needs work, that doesn't mean it needs to change entirely. You just have to figure out what aspects of your warm-up are working and which ones aren't. You can then steadily remove what's broken and add new elements that increase both the quality of your play and the duration that you can sustain that quality. Consider adding the following steps to your warm-up in the order below. 1. Remove and minimize the potential for distractions. 2. Review long-term goals and set short-term goals for the day, session, or tournament. These can be a combination of tactical, mental, or other poker-related goals. 3. Review strategic notes that will help you to correct your tactical and/or mental game weaknesses. 4. Do some deep breathing and/or visualization. The first step narrows your focus and creates the bubble around poker by removing all the potential distractions. Depending on the environment which you typically play, there might be a long list of potential distractions. Write them out so you can check them off before each time you play. You will then be ready to move on to reviewing and setting goals. Review your existing long-term goals so you're reminded of how important this session or tournament is in the pursuit of them. Then review or set specific goals for the day. One essential short-term goal is to play in the zone. As you probably suspect, setting this goal makes getting into the zone more likely. This is true because you first have to acknowledge that getting there isn't automatic, and that forces you to make the necessary adjustments. You can also set results and quality goals, such as increasing the length of your session, playing a certain number of tables, and improving specific areas of your tactical or mental game. Make sure you're aware of the impact that your goals have on your energy and the degree to which you feel challenged. If they are too high or too challenging, you may only be able to play in the zone for a short time, if at all. On the other hand, if your goals aim too low, they won't generate enough motivation to play in the zone. Once you have your goals clear in your mind, The next step is to review your tactical strategy. This is similar to what most professional athletes do prior to every game. They get themselves ready to win by